Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We come to you once a week. We're around our kitchen table right here in the middle of the KHOI studios in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes, we do. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Thanks to our supporters, thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us today. Community radio is a very special thing. We get to talk about what we are passionate about. And here on the Donalana Kitchen, we talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. You get Donna and I together, we do have opinions.
We talk.
Yes, we do. And we kind of try to keep you up on what is the latest in food and agriculture, but mainly what is on our plates here in central Iowa. And to that effect, from the Donalana Kitchen News Department, we have an item, and tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick, that's a ticker tape. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick-tick. Go ahead, Donna. What did you find for
us? Okay, well, what's happened this week, a little kind of noteworthy thing, is the World Health Organization has put out a proposal that the consultation, they're collecting information and opinions, but they are urging globally that trans fat be taken out of diets globally.
That's a big thing.
They
globally,
want it down to globally. 1% of calories. They also suggest that for saturated fat, no more than 10% of calories. So I have a little quote here from Marion Nessel about this, and she's an NYU nutritionist whom I trust a great deal. And she's saying the one thing about the problems with these proposals is she says, not that she disagrees with the science behind it at all. She says, I wish that dietary recommendations would refer to foods, not nutrients. We don't eat specific fatty acids. We eat foods containing mixtures of saturated, unsaturated, and polysaturated fatty acids. And some foods have more of one kind than the other. Trans fats appear in highly processed foods. Therefore, they are a euphemism for snack and other foods containing them. As for saturated fats, the dietary guidelines give their main sources, and the guidelines have two layers of euphemisms. Saturated fat is a euphemism for meat and dairy foods, and these have higher proportions of saturated fatty acids. And also, mixed dishes, this is from the, I think the USDA guideline, and protein foods are also euphemisms for meat and dairy foods. But as she says, saying so is politically impossible now, and this is because of food lobbies, basically. So, and one thing she did not mention when we're talking about meat and dairy is, and people are not really making this distinction yet, but what the cows for both the meat and the dairy are fed does affect their fatty acid profile. So eating grass-fed beef is not the same as eating the kind of what we're calling conventional or even organic. If the cows have eaten grass, they do have a healthier fatty acid profile. So that's a distinction that is certainly at this point not going to make it into these food recommendations. But I did want to note that.
Ah, very good.
So obviously, once again, we need to be more conscious about our food choices. And here's always my bottom line takeaway. There's no such thing as eating too many vegetables.
Oh, thank you, Donna.
All of us can eat more vegetables.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, we've all been enjoying the spring weather here. There's been lilacs and tulips and lots of things out that have wonderful smells and in the garden and things
growing. Yes, we went from winter to summer in one day, and I always say That doesn't happen in nature.
Well, it happens in Iowa.
Yeah,
it does.
Well, it happened this year.
It sure does. Today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we'll be considering the tasty world of herbs. This past weekend, KHOI and the Donna Lana Kitchen had an event. It was a tea party. And at that tea party, there was a gathering. The tea party was a way for people get together to talk about sexual harassment and
in the workplace.
In the workplace.
And it was a fundraiser for the radio.
It was. And thanks to the people that came to that. And Donna kind of took over the food of the tea party. Talk about, list the menu of
the
tea party.
Well, we decided it should be a tea party because we'd like to, you know, tea party has now have such political implications relating, referencing back to the Boston Tea Party, I'm sure. But really, a tea party is usually a gathering of women to talk amongst themselves, enjoy themselves. So I wanted to reclaim the culinary tradition of the use of the word tea party. And in fact, we did have tea. We had tea from Little Woods Herbs. It was delicious. And then we kind of did have an herbal theme. Lana made rosemary lemon cookies. I made lavender scones. And we also had tarragon lemonade.
Pretty darn good.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah. Well, today...
And we'll have recipes later in the show.
Yeah, yeah. Today we'll consider the tasty world of herbs. And what about cooking and eating and consuming herbs in general, Donna?
Well, it is that time of year to plant your herb gardens. And also the perennials that one has are popping up.
The
first
a pleasant
of which
surprise.
Is always lovage, yes. And, of course, garlic chives, which are a rather almost a noxious weed around here. But they are edible and they are delicious. And I want to encourage people. Like, I am not – Lana is the farmer gardener and she grows unbelievable stuff. I am not particularly green-thumbed. However – I do always have herbs in my garden because, A, they're really easy to grow, and they're ridiculously expensive to buy unless you want to use teeny quantities. And they're also, I consider adding fresh herbs to anything, whether it is sweet or savory, is kind of like an easy way to, you know, take your cooking skills up a notch. It's almost like a cheap trick, you know? If you use a fresh herb in something in a decent quantity, that's whatever is appropriate for the dish, it always tastes better.
It always does.
We should be planting all of these basils in our yards.
Yes.
Among other things.
Let's talk about, easy stuff. Not the first thing you think about, but let's talk a bit about basils. There are many different varieties of
basil. There's not just, the basil that everybody thinks about as basil, that is the one that you buy in the grocery. Well, and here's the other thing about planting your own. There are lots of herbs that you cannot buy at the grocery store.
That's true.
And, for example, Thai basil would be one of them. Or any of the ones other than the standard one is called Genovese basil. Mm-hmm. That's the one that you see and everybody knows. And
mm-hmm. Or Italian. If the word Italian is in there. Mm-hmm. Italian large leaf. Italian sweet leaf. But it's the big – think pesto. That's a good thing for basil.
Right.
Yeah.
But so, Lana, what other basils are you growing?
Well –
Some of my favorites,
Lana. And I grow them because it gives you the wonderful variety. There's all that lovely Italian big green stuff, but you can get if you want something a bit less rambunctious.
Yeah, they do have different flavors. Varieties of basils.
You can get a globe. Bush basil that has smaller leaves.
I love to grow those. They do have tiny little leaves. But I find them more pungent, mm-hmm. and they're a really good one because, like, my regular basil will get kind of straggly, and then it starts to turn bitter. But the globe basil.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like growing those because it does have a very clear, lovely basil flavor, and it's quite easy to manage in the garden.
And it is often recommended for growing in pots. It's mm-hmm, smaller. Mm-hmm. It's small. I love growing lots of different red basils. Purple. They almost look black. There's different kinds. There's opal basil. There's amethyst. There's purple ruffles, which ruffles. And red Reuben. Red Reuben is, well, according to the Johnny's Seed Catalog, red Reuben is supposed to be the tastiest, but I think they all taste good. Just that the red basil I find is, I don't know, a deeper flavor, like the difference between white wine, red wine. It's deeper, deeper red wine.
Yeah, but
red.
It's not that different from from the classic basil. I like the red basils because, like, for in salads or potato salads or whatever, they add a nice color.
Yes, they do. And you mentioned Thai basil.
Thai basil, you know, it distinctly different flavor. I mean, it's still basil, but that's, of course, wonderful in Asian foods. And it's one of the herbs that I dry because you can't buy it. And lemon basil also you can't buy, usually. So mm-hmm. I do like to grow and dry those and use them, of course, all summer long too.
Yeah. Very good. Lemon basil tastes lemony. There also is a lime basil. I find lime basil a little trickier to grow, but yes, you can grow that too. There's another basil I like to mention because I've just recently discovered it and more people are discovering it too. It's called holy basil or Tulsi basil. You can find it. It is, or they call it Hindu basil.
It's not a culinary basil.
No.
You don't really cook with it. Don't throw it in your pasta.
It's in India.
It's medicinal.
It has all sorts of religious and holy and wonderful connotations for health and longevity. Tulsi, Tulsi, a very delicate little plant to get started. It does grow pretty well, like all the other basils, but it's not quite as tough as the
Italian
one.
Tea.
Yes. Think of it as aromatic and floral tasting and perfumey tasting. It has a very unique, wonderful smell, and it makes lovely, lovely tea. Tulsi basil. Yes. Donna, you recently had a field trip and you ran into something made with sorrel. Let's first talk about what sorrel is.
Well, the classic one is green. It is a perennial. Mm-hmm. It should be coming up about now. You grew one last year that had red veins in it. That was very pretty.
Sorrel is a lemony flavored green, large leafy green growing from a very tough root, comes back year after year. And I love to use that lemon taste in salads.
Yes, you can just clip it and throw it straight into the salad. There's a classic French sorrel soup.
Mm-hmm. Lemony taste.
But let me warn you, as soon as the heat hits the sorrel, it loses all of its green and gets just kind of gray. But it does put the flavor of the lemon into, like a chicken soup or, you know, any kind of vegetable-y mm-hmm. soup. And as Lana was saying, a couple of weeks ago, I went to Chicago and I got to go to, I think it's called The Girl and the Goat. So this is Stephanie Izard is a chef who has now, she's like probably at the moment the hottest chef in Chicago kind of thing. So, of course, I wanted to go and see what was on her menu. And we did have a dessert that was a lemon. The plate had lemon cake, several lemony different things, and it had a sorrel sorbet. For the lemon, you know, to as another echo of a lemon flavor. Now, it was a bright green, beautiful. So they must have juiced the sorrel fresh or something. Something that it was not cooked, but it made a lovely dessertish sort of thing.
Ooh, using herbs in a sorbet. What a nice springy idea. Very good.
Oh, yeah. I have another story. One of the herbs that I grow usually is anise hyssop. It's an old-fashioned herb, and the lovely thing about it is once you get some of it in your garden, the next year it pops up in a different place, and it has a pretty purple flower on it, and the bees love it, and all of those kinds of things. So a couple of years ago, there was two very well-known chefs came to Ames to do what they called the sausage boot camp at ISU. It was kind of the beginning of when all the chefs had to make their own charcuterie and things like that. So there was, I think, Greg Higgins from Seattle and another wonderful chef from Chicago. And so I said, oh, well, they got to come over for dinner, you know. And so I, you know, kind of did the Iowa spread. And one of the things I put on the menu was I made an anise hyssop sorbet as a palate cleanser somewhere in the middle of the meal. And in the sorbet was so all you do to make a sorbet is, well, I have a really good ice cream maker machine, but you steep it like you would a herb, make it fairly strong. And I think this had probably some ginger and lemon in it with the anise hyssop.
So like a strong tea, you make a reduction.
Yeah, I mean, you have to make it strong enough, and you have to add some sugar. When you are making something cold, you have to remember that the flavor will be muted by the cold. So you have to bump your flavors up, including your sweetness. So I served this at the dinner. Everybody loved it. We had a wonderful time. And that same year at the James Beard Awards, I noticed that the Chicago chef, who was in charge of a certain part of the meal, presented anise hyssop. He put the plants on the table, and he also made some, I've forgotten if it, but with some other application of anise hyssop. And I was so thrilled because, you know, chefs really do copy off of each other and take inspiration from each other. And it is a lovely herb. So if you don't have any in your garden, it grows quite well around here.
Yeah, one of those happy to show up again kind of plants. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And a lovely bee plant. Bee plant. Good. Let's talk about mints. Mints. Anise, I don't know if anise hyssop is a mint, but it's close, isn't it? I don't know.
Close, but it doesn't have a minty flavor.
I went around and kind of plucked different mints that I have from my garden.
Now, there are many.
There are many, and I found that some do well. Others don't. Some taste better as they get older and come back. Others kind of give up and just turn into an ornamental. So I went around and plucked different kinds of mints, and let's see, what do I have here? I have something called an orange mint. And mints are notorious for getting the names of the people that gave them to me. I don't know what kind of mint it is, but I call it Mike's mint because I got it from a guy named Mike. Then we have one called Helen's mint.
Yes, that's the Helen Gunderson mint. And I have to say it's my favorite. It has a really bright flavor, a really classic minty flavor. And I don't know if it's I don't know the difference. I mean, I can't identify a spearmint from a peppermint or something. Maybe the spearmint is a more long pointy. I don't know. But anyway, it is wonderful for cooking with. It makes great teas, great.
It's a hearty thing.
Cocktail mixers.
Very good, Donna.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. So that's the Helen Gunderson mint,
and we found it
at Helen's yard last year, and she made some plants, and both Lana and I have it in our gardens now.
The best thing about mint, well, best thing about herbs, you can share them. So, and we've got those. I've got something called apple mint, a rather different-looking sort of mint. It grows tall on a stalk, and it has fuzzy leaves, and it's good. It's good. I can't say it smells and tastes like apple, but there it is. And it's very nice tea, or very nice to add to tea. And I also grow lots of chocolate mint, which has a heavier sort of taste, I think. Some people really like it. I think it's good.
Right. I wouldn't probably put it in my mint mojito, though.
Oh, all right.
It's not that classic minty brightness.
Right. And Donna, you found a mint. Where did you brought it?
A few years ago. You know how the Hort Department has a prairie flower sale?
Prairie flower sale.
And local indigenous plants. And I bought this mint, which I have no idea what it is, and it's in my prairie corner of my garden. And it's also one of those little fuzzy kinds of mints. Mm-hmm. But it is a local or localized mint.
Yeah. So talk to people that have a garden, because everybody's got their favorite.
Yeah, people always worry about mints taking over, but I don't have that problem. I'm just happy to see them.
Yes, happy to see them. And of all the things to take over, let the mints take over. You can mow them off if you want. That's all right. They give so much. Herbs are such a nice thing to do.
And they come back. You only have to start them once.
Oh, and now the entire studio smells like mint.
It does. Thank you. That's our engineer, Becca. Yes, it does. See, it's always nice to remind folks that we are actually kind of tasting things and pulling things
around.
And
these things are aromatic. So.
Yes, it is. It is. Very good. Well, I just want to mention some of the sources that I use. Now, you can find anything online, of course, but the best books
we
are
have
the
books.
Kind, the best
for
books
years,
are,
books.
Yeah, are the kind that the pages are falling out of and are dirty from being taken to the garden. I'll recommend two here. Herbal Bounty by Stephen Foster, The Gentle Art of Herb Culture, a 6x9 horizontal book with really nice illustrations and really nice helpful advice. And here's another one, The Complete Book of Herbs, A Practical Guide to Growing and Using Herbs by Leslie Bremis, closer to a coffee table size. And that also has page after page of good stuff, including the history of them. And then they actually have pictures of the parts of the plants and all kinds of things. So that's The Complete Book of Herbs, Practical Guide to Growing. So you can find your favorite. Do not be afraid of herbs. My goodness, they just want to grow in your garden. Yes,
and I want to recommend a culinary herbal book. There is a restaurant, I think it's in Oregon or somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. It's called Herb Farm. And he has two cookbooks at this point. But he lists the herbs. He grows everything at his restaurant that he uses. And he really emphasizes all the herbs. And that... sometimes if I want to stir my imagination, I will look up his combinations, and he really tells you how to use it, how to grow it, where to put it. It's Herb Farm. Just Google Herb Farm and see what you get.
Right. I can't remember his name. That's the name of his farm, too. I recommend that book,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's
Herb
a really
farm.
Good cookbook.
Connect up the stuff that grows with the stuff you eat. Oh, very good. You're listening to KHOI 89.1. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. The Donna Lena Kitchen. That was a bit of a polka there to kind of cleanse our palate for talking about herbs. We're talking about herbs here on the Donna Lena Kitchen, and I was mentioning something to smell. The herb books kind of get you started. It gives you courage. That's what we need, courage. There's all kinds of different things, not only to eat, but there's also herbs that are just for smell. And I'll talk about a herb that is just for smell.
Oh, for the potpourri.
Ah, potpourri, yes. Now, smell is a very subjective sort of thing. Some people like a certain smell and other people don't. And this is one of those things that you may like or you may not. Talk about an herb that will come back in in spades. It does. This is called Sweet Annie.
I love it. I mean, you don't cook with it.
Oh, heaven, don't cook. It fills your nose. It actually tickles your nose. And people use it to make wreaths out of, to hang in swags in the fall, to kind of clear the air. I hang it in my closet. I like that smell.
I've heard of people putting it into little pillows to sleep with.
Oh, that too. Yeah. There's some people that come and take a whiff of that and they start sneezing and they don't like it. But I like Sweet Annie. It is of the Artemisia family, which means...
And it's pretty.
It grows very tall, kind of like asparagus grows very
tall.
Yeah,
and it will go everywhere.
It seeds. Yeah. If you have a place in the back of your garden that's sunny... And you want a nice green frilly curtain back there.
How tall does it grow?
Oh, taller than me.
Oh, really?
Oh, they can get get really right up
there. Okay, in my yard they only go about 2.5.
Okay, see there's a shady yard. Yeah. I have some out in the field that is
Wow.
It's a very pretty thing, and I always grab some and like you said put it in a little pillow or put it in a unused mismatch.
You smell it and it makes you happy.
Yeah.
I promise.
Put it in an unused sock and put it in your undie drawer, undies and sweaters. It's nice. Yeah. Sweet Annie. It's an Artemisia, a very frilly looking plant.
Grows very well in Iowa.
That's an herb to smell. Yes, it does. Another herb to smell, although you can cook with this too, is... I like growing this. There's a lot of different sages. This is pineapple sage.
Oh, and that grows quite tall and is very pretty in
the garden.
That's
a pretty thing. I just grow it in the garden. It puts up really pretty red flowers in the fall. It's kind of an afterthought in the fall.
And do you know what? Hmm. I have used those, and there's not very many of them, but if you have enough of them, they are a beautiful garnish on a salad or some kind of platter because the flowers have a lovely little sweetness to them.
Yeah, they do.
They're quite edible.
Pineapple sage. And I have cooked pineapple sage, laid it in a au gratin potato sort of thing. Or scallop potatoes, and line the pan with it first, and get this kind of sagey potato taste.
I think it's lighter than the classic sage, and perhaps a tad sweeter, but it is a lovely garden plant.
Yeah, it is a light, and I like rosemary. I like pineapple sage. It does very well in Iowa. It is not winter hardy, unlike some of the other sages. I bring it in and start it all over again in the spring. It's very happy here. Yes, it is.
Oh, you know what else we bring in and take out in the spring? There are two things that both Lana and I grow, and one of them is lemon verbena, which I bring in and cut it. You cut it way back, and then it kind of, during the winter, it starts all over again. It's got to have a little sun, and it starts getting these little bitty leaves, and then I put it out. You can cook with that. Like, I have a lovely cookie recipe with them, Madeline.
That's on our Donalana Kitchen
That's
website.
That's right. And it also really smells good. If you're out in the garden and you brush on that, it's like, that's another lemony smell.
That's one of those, some plants are called lemon this and lemon that. This lemon verbena really does lemon justice when you eat it.
Oh, it's very good. It doesn't taste so lemony, but it smells so lemony.
Yes, it does.
And the other plant that both Lana and I are is rose geranium.
Yeah, Donna talks about rose geranium a lot.
Lana grows them quite well.
Yeah, another really nice, lovely herb to smell. You can cook with it, too.
Yeah, it's really good in sweets, like whipped cream, rose geranium whipped cream.
Ooh, what's not to like?
Yeah, you take the geranium leaves and now this is not, don't use the citronella ones, okay? You must have a rose geranium. And you kind of warm the cream up and steep it in the cream like you would a tea. And then you strain the leaves out after it's cooled down. And then you just make it like regular whipped cream, a little sugar. And you can omit the vanilla because the rose geranium has flavor.
Very good. Now, some herbs just don't dry well. And you can buy those little tins, but they just aren't the same. You end up with a bunch of powder. There's there's all kinds of like oregano and thyme.
There's two things. There are some herbs that do dry well. Like I dry my own basils, especially the ones that you can't buy, like the Thai basil that we mentioned. But even your own home dried Genovese basil has a much stronger basil flavor than what you can buy at the store. Even though you've dried it yourself and you use it all winter, it's probably not as old as what you buy in a bag at the store. And the other thing you do when you're drying, I just pick them all and put a string around them and hang them up to dry. And then when they are dry, like starting to litter the floor and stuff, you'll know they're dry enough. Then you gently take them off because the less you crush them, the more of their volatile oils they will hold while you're storing them. So the basils are good to dry. I do dry lemon verbena. What else do you dry, Lana?
I do mints because I like to make combinations of teas.
Right,
so
right.
Yes, I do. And I sometimes have luck drying dill leaves, not dill seed, but dill leaves, if I get them early enough, or you can also put that stuff in the freezer. But otherwise, think of through the winter keeping a little pot of things in the house. Because fresh herbs are really good.
Some of the herbs don't, the more delicate ones don't dry well.
Oregano's okay.
Oregano is okay.
But thyme. Thyme, cilantro,
thyme.
Parsley, forget it.
Yeah. Those herbs are just too delicate, and even though you can buy tarragon.
Yes, we have some input here from, what do you have to say, Beth?
I just had, for people who are in dorms or in apartments, you can just hang up command strips up on your ceiling, like what I did, and just like
command
tie it with
strips?
Yarn.
What's a command? Like a fly
sticky,
paper or something?
You can get command hooks, so you put a sticky thing,
okay.
And then you put it there, and then you just hang it up with some yarn.
You
can do it even if you're in an apartment. So
very good. Yeah. Yes, get those herbs and dry them. Very good, very good.
But some of them, as we were saying, are not worth drying. Or at least if you're gonna I never buy dried tarragon. It just doesn't have any flavor, and I never buy dried cilantro.
Oh, that's always the difference.
Horrible, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh my.
However.
There is something called lovage, and that dries pretty well.
Yes, I do dry lovage, too, because I cook with it a lot. So,
yeah, lovage is of the celery family. So if you like celery things, you'll like lovage. And that is a perennial. It does come back. It's kind of one of those hard ones to start, but it's well worth the fuss. Yes, it is. Well, you were talking about rosemary too. Rosemary is a nice thing to keep in a pot because
it doesn't take much. You can put too much rosemary in something. It's one of the few herbs that is so strong you can overdo it.
It kind of ends up being medicine-y.
Yeah, it gets too bitter too quickly. But growing a little pot of it, because dried rosemary, and there's a lot of it around, it's not the same.
It's kind of like little chunks of straw is what it is.
Yeah,
hard
bits. I kind of bring in a little rosemary that's maybe no more than 6 by 6 inches. It's not that big, and I won't even use that all winter. I mean, it only takes a tiny little bit of rosemary to do its thing.
Learn to live with all this wonderful greenery around us. Yes, yes. Thinking about herbs to smell and herbs to eat. Herbs are also used medicinally. And I was digging around in the Donalana Kitchen Archives, which you too can access by going to khoyfm.org and go to the Donalana Kitchen page. And you can look for the archives of our past shows. We have a little audio clip here that I kind of dug out of the deep, dark past of our history. Way back in April 2015, we talked to a very interesting woman, a writer, a native of New York. She wrote a book called Eating Wildly, Foraging for Love, Life, and the Perfect Meal. It was memoirs of her foraging. You think you can't find things here? In Iowa, we have green all over. She forages for things in Central Park, believe it or not. She's also the assistant professor of creative nonfiction at CUNI. and writes for the New York Times Magazine about foraging. Ava Chin, we talked to Ava Chin.
Welcome to Ames, Ava.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
We wanted to start out saying that Lana was just in my backyard the other day, and I had just finished reading your book, which has a lot of about motherwort.
Mm.
Just the name. We love the name motherwort, but I didn't realize that we were looking at my plants, and Lana goes, "You've got a lot of motherwort here." And I said, "Is that what I've been pulling out for the last 5 years?" And it keeps coming back everywhere. So now I've been drinking motherwort tea madly. Thank you very much. Tell us about motherwort.
Sure, absolutely. So I've written about it for the book.
Quite
I can
a
read
bit.
A little section from it if
and
you
I
like.
And I have to say they're really pretty, too.
It's very pretty. It's a very distinct colored leaf. It's almost slightly fuzzy.
Yeah, and kind of ruffly, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's a member of the mint family. It's got a square-shaped stem,
mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite plants. When you first taste it, it can be extremely bitter. Right? But it's known as being a nervine, so it's like kind of calms your nerves.
Oh, just what we need.
That's right. That's right. So if you know you're kind of a high strung type A personality, maybe you need a little bit of motherwort in your life.
Or if you're an overly tired mother or grandmother.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So this is a section. I first discovered motherwort growing in the wild in Boulder, Colorado. I had gone on a foraging walk with their esteemed forager, Bridget Mars.
Ah.
And I was so thrilled to actually see it in the wild. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs. "The leaves were shaped like a lion's tail, and I thought about the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz combing the end of his tail between his paws. I rubbed a leaf between my fingers. The motherwort was less fuzzy than the common mallow and smelled like my grandfather's desk drawer, a repository for curios and odd mementos, pressed handkerchiefs embroidered with someone else's initials, buffalo nickels, an old extracted tooth. I'd first learned of Leonoris cardiaca from a Chinese doctor in Brooklyn who recommended it for women's issues like hormonal imbalances and spot bleeding. In Old English, wort means plant, and I love the idea of a mothering plant that could aid my feminine issues and calm my nerves. According to David Hoffman's The Herbal Handbook, motherwort was used for menstrual conditions as a relaxant during menopause and as a tonic for the heart. Back then, I tried the herb in pill form and found it extremely dry and bitter. I had to drink an entire glass of water in order to get it down. Because of the taste, I had never taken it on a regular basis, and so couldn't confirm whether or not it worked. But here it was, alive and thriving in the middle of downtown Boulder. And apparently in your yard.
Yes, lots of it. Is it something I can dry also for?
Yes, but how I like to take it is to dry it first and then make a tincture out of it. So you kind of...
Alcohol, glycerin?
Alcohol.
Uh-huh.
A combination of like your highest proof alcohol you can get your hands on. For me, that's just a...
We have plenty of white lightning here in Iowa.
You can use that, mm-hmm. and a little bit of water. Mm-hmm. And you shake it. Shake it every day,
mm-hmm.
For about a month, and then you'll get a tincture. And it's a lot easier to my palate than to drink it as a tea because it is so bitter. So there's something nice about taking a shot of it.
It's not tasting bitter yet. Do you suppose it's because it's so young and fresh?
I don't know. I've had it pretty young. I found it pretty bitter. That maybe you're just, you enjoy it so much.
I do. We've been pushing the bitters because that's the underdeveloped flavor of the American palate.
Right.
And also it's very helpful in aiding digestion.
That was a little talk between Donna and Lana and a guest named Ava Chin, who visited Ames in 2015. We grabbed her to be on the radio show, a wonderful writer and an explorer of things that you can forage. It was so fun to talk about food with her. She talked about motherwort. All the warts. There's lots of other warts around, too. But motherwort. And we just had Mother's Day, so maybe it's connected.
That's right. And motherwort is very abundant right now.
It is.
It is also one of the first things up in the spring.
A nice, tough plant, motherwort. Yes, it is. So, you're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. If you want to find out more about the Donalana Kitchen, about this great radio station, go to khoifm.org. And if you go to the Donalana Kitchen page, there are not only all our old shows, if you just can't get enough of us, but there's also a recipe page. And you'll have a nice time looking at things there, and keep in touch. We appreciate your support. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We are talking about herbs today. It's spring, so we should be talking about herbs. Let's get back to good things to eat here. Donna and I recently hosted a little, well, along with KHOI in general.
We had a tea party.
We had a tea party. One of the things I really liked was your tarragon lemonade, Donna. Talk about your tarragon
this
lemonade.
We kind of had an herbal theme with the tea party. So for tarragon lemonade, A, you must use fresh tarragon. And this time of year, I found it at the Hy-Vee. Huh? So I just bought a pack of tarragon. You put it in, I want to make a simple syrup out of it. So I took sugar and water, probably maybe a quart of water or a quart and a half of water, at least a cup of sugar, and you bring it to a boil so the sugar's dissolved. Then you clap the tarragon into it, and on goes the lid, and you just turn the heat off. So it's steeping in the sugar water. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when it's completely come back to room temperature, it's kind of sucked all the tarragon out of the plant into the water, and you just strain it off. And then I mixed it with lemon juice and water. To taste.
It was really good. Of course, you made a huge quantity because it was a punch bowl and everything.
Oh, yes.
But somehow that tarragon working with the lemon was
It's a very
tasty.
Nice combination. It's like you're drinking lemonade and you go, oh, what's that little extra flavor in there?
Right. It just isn't lemon. It's really, really a little soda water might be nice with that.
Oh, that would be good. Oh, it is also, it makes an excellent cocktail mixer, just the tarragon simple syrup.
Oh, Yah-ha-ha-ha. There you go. Mm-hmm. Tarragon. That's a good use for tarragon. Tarragon lemonade. Another thing that we had on the menu, and Donna mentioned
before. Oh, these were yum. This is Lana's recipe.
Now, I went through my recipe book, a recipe box. I have a recipe box that is, oh, it's got some real old favorites in
it. It's a classic recipe box.
And I think I got this, I think from the there was a magazine for a while called Herb Magazine.
Huh.
And I subscribed back in my young bride days. Yes, I did. And tried to learn some things out of there. I remember this recipe, and I've made it a few times. Rosemary lemon cookies, and this will be posted on the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage. These are refrigerator cookies, which means you make up the dough. And they're heavy, heavy in butter. What's not to like? Heavy in butter. You put them in the refrigerator to keep the butter solid or to keep the butter firm as you're working with it.
Which also means, right, that you can, like, if you want to make six cookies, you can. Because you've got it sitting there in the refrigerator ready to put into the oven.
Okay, here's the recipe for the rosemary lemon cookies. They turn out real pretty, little golden-y looking things.
They're thin and delicate and I don't know what, less than 2 inches around. They're very nice.
Right. 1 cup flour and a bit more to help shape the dough a little later. This is good. 1/2 cup yellow cornmeal.
Nice texture to them.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Now, 1/2 cup unsalted butter, so that's a lot of butter for these cookies. A pinch of salt, 1/2 cup sugar, 1 egg, this is a lot, but 1 tablespoon rosemary, finely chopped, and this should be fresh rosemary.
And very finely chopped.
Yeah, very finely chopped, otherwise you get little stuff stuck in your teeth. 2 tablespoons lemon zest, 1/2 teaspoon vanilla. Combine the flour, cornmeal, and salt. Beat the butter and sugar until creamy. Add the egg, rosemary, lemon zest, and vanilla. Beat that up. Then gently add the flour mixture and shape the dough into a 1 1/2 inch thick log. Now, the dough is really sticky, so you might want to sprinkle on a little more flour. And you can use wax paper or plastic wrap to kind of make this into a log shape.
You can also wet your hands, because I do that with biscotti. Same
thing. Idea. Yeah. Same idea. You're dealing with a glop that you want to turn into a log. So then you would compress it as you go along and kind of make the ends flat. Because you're going to slice cookies over this. So wrap this log in plastic or wax paper. You can do it as one great big log, or you can do it in two little logs.
And you could cut it in half and stick half in the freezer as well.
Yes, you can. You can freeze it for way later or chill it in the refrigerator at least 4 hours or overnight. Overnight is really handy. Then the next day, set your oven to 350 degrees. Put your parchment paper on cookie sheets, because it's important the parchment paper has to be on the cookie sheets, because it's butter heavy. You don't want it to stick. Take the dough out of the refrigerator. Cut slices 3/8 inches thick. Bake 15 to 17 minutes until the edges of cookies are golden. Don't let them get overdone. Cool them on a rack. And this is a hint. When you're dealing with these butter-rich cookies that are coming out of the refrigerator, don't put the cookies, as you cut them off the log, onto a hot cookie sheet. Because by the time you get the cookie sheet all filled up, the first ones are going to start melting. And you want these to go right into the oven when they're still room temperature, and then they kind of keep their shape.
Right. If you're doing a little production baking, that is kind of, you know, you pull one load of cookies out, you skim them off, and you put another. So in this instance, let the cookie sheet cool before.
Yeah, we'll just wave it around the kitchen a little bit. That works.
Or have multiple sheets.
Because I did put one little batch on a already hot sheet. I turned back to it, and there they were all melty. And they
Lana speaks from experience.
They didn't cook well.
Here we go. So those are
the rosemary lemon cookies, and they will be on the Donna Lana Kitchen website. Look for that recipe page. Yes, it was. Yeah. Do you have any other things you want to mention?
Well, there were a couple of herbs that we didn't mention that grow readily in the garden. bergamot, which is also called bee balm or Monarda, which I love. It's so pretty. And it also, it's one of those ones that comes one year in one spot and then it kind of moves around, as does lemon balm, which is the other one.
One of those joyful things that once you've got it, you probably always will have it. And it's a nice plant.
And we didn't mention catnip, too, which also springs up very easily. And usually my cat rolls in it till it gets crushed.
But
they love it.
That's good. Those things, yes. And yes, both lemon balm and catnip, if I recall, are part of the mint family. And you can tell mint family by square stem. Reach down, and the stem isn't round if you roll it between your finger.
And is that true? Isn't basil also in the mint family?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, okay. All right. My bad there.
I don't know. We'll have to look that up. That's good. Bee balm. It is such a pretty blend. I'm trying to get some.
And it comes in colors. Some, yeah. Red being my favorite. I think the purple one is the most common. And you will see that around town a lot this summer in people's gardens. It's a real looker.
Ah, yes, we do. Good. Well, we've been talking about herbs today. A very good thing to talk about this time of year. If you have a friend with an herb garden, if you see a healthy plant that you want to put
in
your
garden. And you ought to have your own herb garden, got to say, right?
And like,
right
and
outside
like
the kitchen door.
And like Becca said, either just gather some and dry them as you go along, or get yourself a window box, get yourself a little pot and put it in a window, and you'll have the company and the good smells and the places to, the opportunity to eat good stuff.
Yes, you'll add a little layer of healthy sophistication to your summer cooking.
Be kind to your tongue, and it does always taste like summer to sprinkle in some good stuff. Chives are up now. Ramps are up now. Use those alliums, the allium family, the onions. Oh, it celebrates spring.
Oh, right, like a quick pasta dish is run out and cut some of those wild garlic chives. And if you have it, a little lovage, throw it in some hot buttered pasta, add the Parmesan. You can put tomatoes if you want or not.
Or not.
Canned tomatoes this time of year it would be.
But that kind of stuff that's fresh, it's just good for the soul, good for the tongue, and good for the soul.
Plus, you feel so clever when you're pulling something right out of the garden.
Yeah, that's how we got this far as a human culture. We knew how to hunt and gather. I like to hunt and gather in the herb garden. Very good. There is an upcoming lecture, Donna. Can you tell
me? Today.
Today
it is.
Tuesday.
At the public library at 5 o'clock right here in downtown Ames. Dr. Charles Benbrook will be speaking about kind of the effects of glyphosate, the health considerations that we need to be aware of here, especially here in central Iowa. Glyphosate, or Roundup Ready, as we all know, is used widely around us. It is in the air. It is in the water, maybe. Who knows? Anyway, it's something we need to educate ourselves about. Lana and I will be there to listen to Dr. Charles Benbrook. He's coming and speaking on behalf of Pesticide Action Network about glyphosate or Roundup Ready and its effects on public health.
That glyphosate stuff, it does show up all over, and we should find out what is going on. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can hear us here Tuesday live at noon. Live. Yes, we are. And it's repeated 7 p.m. Tuesday evening. Today we had music by two gentlemen, Paul Sarton and Paul Hutchinson. They exist as a duo called Belshazzar's Feast. We'll go out with their version of reels, and they call them the May Reels. And since this is May, that's a good idea. Support community radio. Explore the world of herbs. Tickle your taste buds with those herbs now. Try something new.
They're good for you, too.
They are good for you.
Yep.
Enjoy spring. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Becca Reuter. Eat good food and enjoy life.